Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. To episode 188 of the English with Kirsty podcast. This time I have another interview for you. I'm talking to Zan and Catherine from Acrobat Global, and our conversation is about how we all have a part to play in making communication work well, especially in international teams where people are using one language as a main communication language, but where it's not everybody's first language, and how communication is a shared responsibility for all of us. And there are certainly things that people who are working in their first language can do to make sure that that communication is more effective and that people understand what's going on and that they don't make things harder for people by doing things that, you know, are maybe not good for anyone, but make it particularly difficult for people who are not working in their first language. So I've got this conversation for you. If you want to find out any more about the work that Zan and Catherine are doing, you can find all of the information on the show notes page, which for this episode is englishwithkirsty.com/podcast/episode188. And just to mention, we have audio from three different people here. This was obviously not done face to face because I don't do any of my interviews face to face, but particularly at the moment. So we do have three people's audio, and there are a couple of glitches that I couldn't fix without making something else worse. So, you know, I'm sorry about that, but I think this conversation is really important and really something that we should all take on board and listen to. So I'm sorry if in a couple of places the audio isn't quite as good as in the rest of the episode. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. And if you have any thoughts on it, you can send me an email, kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com. or podcast@englishwithkirsty.com. Please don't spell my name wrong or I won't get it. K-I-R-S-T-Y. And also anything else that you would like to see or hear discussed on the podcast as well, I'd be interested to know about that. Okay, hi, and thank you both for joining us today. Perhaps you can start by telling us something about who you are and what you do.
Okay, hi, Kirsty. Well, my name's Catherine Alavizos. I've got a background in English language teaching, both in the UK and abroad, and I'm also a published author of course books for English as a foreign language. And then in 2019, Zan and I started a company called Acrobat Global, which specialises in training in inclusive communication. And we've also authored two books also on the subject of inclusive communication.
Okay. Great. And Zan, is there anything you want to add about yourself and your background?
My background is similar to Catherine's, and I have a very language-based background. I did a degree in French and German and then started teaching in Spain. I've always really loved languages. I was a translator for many years. And then, like Catherine, was an English language teacher and worked abroad and back in the UK. And Catherine and I started co-producing materials and co-writing materials for mostly teenagers. And we felt that there was an awful lot of material that was out there for international students who are learning English, but there wasn't very much for those who speak English as a first language or even who speak English very proficiently on how they could adapt their language if they're in a classroom or in an international work setting. And that's when we had the idea for our first book, that we would try and offer tips and strategies that we hadn't really seen anywhere else on the internet.
Yeah, I think this is really important. And that's why I asked you to come on the podcast, because I do a lot of work with people who are learning English, who want to improve their English. But having been in meetings and situations where there is a mixture of people with English as a first language and those for whom it isn't their first language, I've noticed sometimes thinking, oh, you could do such a better job with the first language speakers, because I could see things that they were doing that were not massively helpful. And I think I realized that because I'm a speaker of other languages, and when people don't necessarily know what's unhelpful. So I'm going to add the link to your book on the show notes page, but maybe you could give a couple of tips of things that people can do if they're in this situation where there are other speakers who are not necessarily first language speakers of their language. What can people do to help?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, actually, Kirsty, with the fact that if you've learnt languages yourself, you may be aware of some of the adaptations you can make to make yourself more easily understood. But if you don't speak other languages, I think people are often oblivious to how difficult our language really is for speakers of other languages. So in our book, which is called Is That Clear? Effective Communication in a Multilingual World, we go through lots of different tips and strategies. For example, the very first chapter is about pausing. So we all know it's a good idea to slow down, that obviously if you're speaking too fast, it makes it more difficult for people to follow what you're saying. But we really insist on this idea of pausing. So after you say something, to pause, to allow your communication partner, the person who doesn't speak English as a first language, just to have the time to process what you've said. Because I think it's easy to forget how much time they need, because if you're speaking another language, you're not only having to understand what the person has said, but also then think of your response, and quite often then having to translate that from your language back into English in order to respond. And so these pauses are really, really sort of the first tip we give people.
Yeah, and a pause is better than you trying to find three different ways to say the thing that you've just said to make sure that they understood, because the other person might still be processing the first thing that you said. And, you know, more Definitely. And more words doesn't help. It's just sometimes, you know, taking the time to let them take their time.
And I think, unfortunately, we're all a bit uncomfortable with silence. And so in wanting to make somebody feel at ease or to be friendly or to seem polite, we do tend to fill every second with, as you say, reformulating the question if you think they haven't understood, or trying to be chatty and friendly. But actually, this can just lead to a complete, you know, overload of language to process. And obviously, then there's a breakdown in communication.
Yeah, and I think, Zan, what did you want to say?
I think it's very difficult when you're processing that language, if English is your second language, you can often find the conversations just moved on before you manage to contribute to the conversation. And that can be really frustrating, I mean, particularly in a work setting. And we probably all experience that. I mean, sadly, I think we've become increasingly a monolingual nation. And I think because of that, you know, the lack of emphasis in schools on language training, we're maybe just not quite aware of the problems that people have when they're learning a language. One of the other things that is a really interesting area that our workshop attendees are always very interested in is things like questions and instructions. We often use lots of words that we don't really need, and we have negative constructions that can really confuse somebody who speaks English as a second language. So for example, you might say to somebody, "You don't have time for a quick chat, do you?" Or, "I was wondering whether you might be able to spare a few minutes for a quick chat." You know, very, very fast language and very everyday language. But for that person who is working in a second language, it's so much easier if you can just say, "Can we talk?" And it's about simplifying language, not using unnecessary words when we don't need to.
I think that's really important, but there are also first language speakers who benefit from that too. Like if you do this, it's something that will help speakers of other languages, but it's also really good for communicating with everybody, because, you know, clear language is good whoever you are. And in writing too, I remember working on a German project, there was this one individual who wrote really long emails, like pages. And I said to one of my German colleagues, "So, what does he actually want then?" She said, "I'm not sure either."
It's funny you should use that as an example, actually, Kirsty, because we did a workshop for a fruit packing factory, and actually, because they had a very multinational team. But actually, it was the HR manager said that after our workshop, she'd started changing her own emails to, you know, all members of the team, including the native English speakers. And she said she just found herself keep deleting what she'd written, because she thought, well, actually, that's a lot of waffle.
Yeah.
And actually, if I just get to the point and sort of bullet point the, you know, action items or information. So, yeah, we get that response a lot. that a lot of the tips and strategies we suggest is actually just good practice in clear communication. And it's certainly not about dumbing down language, or, you know, it's just about clarity, really, clarity of expression and saying what you mean.
Yeah, not filling it with unnecessary words. I think people do that sometimes to be polite, but that doesn't actually help if you end up confusing somebody, or somebody going away not knowing what you want from them, because that can make you feel quite inadequate, even though the problem is possibly with the other person. You know, like if somebody used too many words, somebody else might feel that they didn't understand it, something about their English. I certainly know within meetings, when, as you said before, when the conversation moves on, once it's happened once, you can begin to shut down, and then you don't participate because you think, oh, it's going to happen again, and then it does. And so you get further and further into the meeting and say less and less, because every time the conversation moves on faster than you can contribute something.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we really stress in our book this idea of a shared responsibility, that communication is a shared responsibility. Mm. So like you said, Kirsty, that the person who's speaking English as a second language could feel the one at fault if there's a communication breakdown. But actually, you know, the fault or responsibility lies with both parties. You know, if somebody hasn't understood, it's just as easily the case that your message wasn't clear enough. And so it's trying to create a shift in mindset, really, that the burden or the onus shouldn't just be on the person learning English as an additional language, but it should be on both parties making effort and adapting their language.
And I guess that goes the other way as well, because I've seen examples of emails written by non-native speakers and they weren't read properly by the native speakers. And then people asking me, how could my email have been better? And I said, well, it was fine. It was the other person didn't read it properly, and that's on them. You know, there's sometimes you can only do as much as you can do. We both have to listen, or we both have to read for the communication to be effective.
Yeah. I think you touched on something there actually, Kirsty, that's quite interesting. Yes, it does work two ways. And I think one of the problems we saw at this fruit packing company was that a lot of the native speaking employees felt that the non-native speaking employees were actually too abrupt and too direct. And we were just trying to say to them that, you know, it's not being rude. These people are dealing in a second language in a workplace, and it's just essential that they be direct in what they're asking somebody to do, but you be direct back to them. It's not about politeness. And I think that whole thing that we use too many words all the time, we're just trying to couch our language in all these polite expressions, but they just add to the confusion. But, you know, conversely, native speakers mustn't be offended almost if they think that a non-native person is being abrupt. It's all about clear communication.
Yeah, and also being polite to try and hide a message within that polite phrase, like, oh, there's just a few things that we need to change about this, when the whole thing is needs to be started again. You know, like if somebody takes that literally, there's just a few small things, so they think, okay, well, I did a good job then, this is fine, next time I'll do exactly the same, because this time there are only a few small things to change. I work a lot with German speakers, and I interviewed a few different people who came to live and work here in the UK, and they said that, well, one was very positive about it. He liked the English politeness, which I was still questioning at that point, is that even a thing? But a lot of people mentioned it, so I guess it is. One person found it quite positive, but a number of people said it was really difficult to know where they stood. And I think that's another point. If something isn't okay, or if something needs to change, you don't need to be brutal about it, but wrapping it up in phrases that are trying to make it sound nicer and more polite can actually lead to more confusion, because the person doesn't actually know if you're happy or not, or if they do need to do anything differently. Or, you know, sometimes the kindest thing to do is to be clear. It doesn't mean unkind, but don't try to use euphemisms and expect people to read between the lines.
Absolutely. We do a section in our workshops on politeness and when it can be a problem, and it's exactly that, the idea that, you know, so often we respond negatively to a request or demand by not actually using the word no.
Yeah.
So we'll say, oh, well, actually, you know, I'm afraid, da 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 da.
And so I don't think that.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, it's a lot of these tips and strategies are very simple, and so they're very easy to implement, but just saying, I'm sorry, but I can't, or no, we can't do this. As you said, you don't have to be rude and blunt about it, but I think completely sort of skirting around any negative language is deeply confusing.
Yeah.
As is the whole idea of implied meaning. You know, somebody, one of our students remarked on the fact that, you know, it took him ages to realise that his manager saying not bad was actually better than quite good.
Yeah.
He's saying, oh, that report's quite good, actually means they're not happy with it. Like, oh, not bad at all is actually more positive. So all this nuanced language, you know, if you don't have the cultural references, which can be part of the problem, but also just, yes, all this implied meaning, I think, yes, use with caution, because I think it will not be received in the way you hope.
And you don't know, especially if somebody's, you know, new, you don't know them very well, if it's a new business relationship, or, I mean, you don't know much about people. Don't always say that English isn't their first language. You don't necessarily know that if you're working in a global environment. So it's best not to assume that everybody knows all these implied meanings actually mean.
That's something else that we always suggest, actually, Kirsty, in our training, because we work quite a lot with executive business students. We've got a couple of workshops that we have with Aston, and it's quite interesting that we're just trying to get them to realise that people won't always admit they don't understand, but what you can do is prepare a little bit in advance, find out about the language level of your clients or your colleagues beforehand. And I think there's too often this assumption that English is the spoken language in a meeting, in a sales deal, and actually it's okay, you know, if you're the native speaker, everyone is going to understand you. And it's just so much more sensitive to actually ask beforehand, even, who is there, how do they find speaking in English, and you can find out a bit more so that you can help people.
Yeah, and also somebody's language proficiency level isn't necessarily how confident they are about speaking a language, because I know with my German it's better now, but when I started, my German was actually fine for engaging in email discussions and being quite forceful when I needed to be. But when I was in a meeting, I didn't have the same level of confidence, even though my language proficiency hadn't changed. It's not the same skill, taking part in a meeting with lots of voices speaking at the same time. And, you know, even if you think somebody's English is very good because you've seen their emails, it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll have the same level of confidence when they come to speak in a meeting.
Exactly. And you can feel very professionally undermined. It can be very frustrating.
Mm-hmm. And also the effect that stress has on your language ability.
Yeah.
I think anyone who's learned a language can relate to that. That, you know, the language you can speak in a relaxed atmosphere compared to when you're under pressure. And yeah. I think that has a huge impact, and again, something you may be unaware of if you haven't learned a language yourself.
Yeah, so is there anything that either of you has experienced that people have done that helped you when you were working in a situation where you weren't using your first language?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because I've learned three different languages in three different ways, and do you know what I always think is, it's quite nice when you're reaching that level of fluency if you can try and converse with people and not be too heavily corrected. It can be really frustrating sometimes, you know, when people will stop you mid-sentence and say, oh no, you haven't got that right or something. You know, give people a little bit, if you can understand them, give them a little bit of space. Really, I used to sometimes find that I was just interrupted all the time and couldn't quite keep up with the thread of the conversation. So, you know, just be aware when people maybe just need to have a go at something. And if you're understanding it, you don't always have to be grammatically perfect.
And I think, you know, I lived and worked in Greece, and I think what I found quite hard, and, you know, a lot of our international students relate to this as well, is socialising in the foreign language. Yeah. So, you know, and the effect it has on your identity as a person, because I remember many times where, you know, I'd be in a group situation and I just couldn't keep up with the conversation. As you know, I may be able to understand it, but as soon as I had my point in my head that I wanted to contribute, the conversation had moved on. And the result of that is not only you know, you're sort of excluded from the conversation. But it's also that feeling that, you know, nobody knows what you're like, or nobody knows your real personality, and you can feel, you know, well, Zan said earlier, in a professional situation, professionally undermined. But also, I think, you know, you can feel, yes, just that your identity sort of disappears, doesn't it? And I think what helped me in those situations was when people actually asked me questions directly, which then involved me in the conversation. It can be as simple as that. And then, you know, you're in the conversation, you can stay in again, but it's so easy to just be sidelined when a conversation's going quickly in a group.
When you start to drift, you drift further and further away.
Yes, yeah. And then lose confidence. And yes, it's... I think identity is an important aspect.
Yeah, sorry, Kirsty, I was just thinking some of my most cringeable moments learning a language have to be trying to use the phone. And, you know, even though I've got a fairly conversant level of Spanish, I used to run a business in Spain, but the phone would often just throw me, because quite often you're just not prepared for it. And it's what you can do is just ask people, you know, to send you an email or a text in advance, arrange the time that you're going to talk to somebody, let them know what that conversation is going to be about. Because when you're on the spot with that conversation, it can be really hard when you're functioning in a second language. So I think particularly phone calls, and maybe even, you know, online meetings too, if you know you're going to have it. I mean, they tend to be more scheduled and everybody knows what it's about, or there's an agenda. But just give a heads up as to what the conversation is about, because that person can be more prepared.
Yeah, it's nice to have the structure, isn't it? I'm going to speak to this person at this time about this topic. And I mean, even in English, I prefer that. Some people just feel more comfortable when they know what to expect. And I think, if you know, it's good to understand that as well.
And I think also just one final thing is just for people to show some acknowledgement of how much effort the other person is making. I think if people say, you know, acknowledge the fact that you're doing all this in a second language, and is there anything I can do to help? Just let me know. I think just making that comment at the beginning can really set the tone and make people feel more comfortable.
Because we're all different, and what would help you wouldn't necessarily help me. You know, we're everybody is different. So it's good to find out what individual people need.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned that you have two books. Would you like to say something about your second book? Because I think that's really important too, and I'd like to spend some time talking about that as well today.
Okay. Well, we published our first book in November 2019, and we started delivering workshops, and we'd done a couple just before lockdown. And we kept hearing at our workshops that these tips for clear communication were really appropriate for a wider audience. And a couple of times we heard people say that they would be very useful for anybody who works, lives, socializes with an autistic person. And through one of our workshops, we got put in touch with Joe Butler, who is an autism consultant based in Nottingham. And we asked Joe if we could send her our book. And it was great. She read it and said, I don't think you have to change much. So much of this is very applicable to working with autistic people. So we decided we'd bring out another version. There were definitely things that we had to change. And really, lockdown gave us the opportunity to work on it together. And we've never actually met in person, but the book got shortlisted 2 weeks ago for a Business Book Award, which we're absolutely thrilled about. And we're really getting some interesting contacts with people who work in training, in HR, I mean, teachers, emergency services, the NHS, you know, this basic communication. It's such a small book, but the tips are really so useful. So we have expanded it. It's slightly bigger than the first book, but there is a lot of overlap as well. Things like, you know, figurative speech, which is very difficult for a non-native speaker and also a neurodiverse person. Small talk that can really derail somebody. Prepared for it. Again, phone calls, you know, they're caught on the hop, they don't know, you know, what the conversation's going to be around, and they have to shift their focus. But that was about it. Have you got anything else, Catherine, you'd like to add?
No, I mean, as you said, there's quite a bit of overlap. the implied meaning is another thing, isn't it? But then there was also extra bits that obviously came into the neurodiverse book. And also what was very different with the second book was that pre-publication, we invited a group of autistic readers from various professional backgrounds to read the book. So each chapter was read and reviewed by an autistic reader, well, several autistic readers, so that we really kind of reflected people's real experiences and they commented and added any experiences or insights. So yeah, the finished product, we're really pleased with, and we've had great feedback. And again, we just feel passionately that, as with the first book, these aren't huge changes that we're suggesting. You know, they're quite small adaptations that could make quite a big difference. And again, it's this idea of, you know, increased empathy and understanding for your communication partner, finding out what they need and, you know, making the changes to make communication easier.
Yeah, and I think it's really, really important, like you said, that you'd spoken with autistic people before, because sometimes things get published about people with no input, and that can be quite frustrating. But you didn't do that. You made sure you got that input. So I think that's really, really important and really good, because then it reflects real life experience that people have.
Yeah, that was essential for us, that, yes, we had, you know, we collaborated and had re-involved autistic people. Yeah.
So I will put the links to that, to both of the books and to your website on the show notes page. Where else can people find out about you and what you're doing? And if you've got anything coming up, where's the best place to contact you?
Well, we've got a website, which is www.acrobat-global. And that's actually all lowercase. So you can find details about what we do and our workshops on there. And we also are on Twitter, Zan and Catherine at Acrobat Global, and Acrobat Global is also has its own LinkedIn page, and we also have personal pages on there as well. And Facebook, we've just started Facebook too, and a little bit of Instagram. So if you search any of our names, you'll find social media posts where we are.
Okay, fantastic. I'll put those links on there, and hopefully people will come and have a look at your books, because I think this is really important. You know, we can all contribute to better communication. It isn't just the other people that need to do that. We all have a role to play in that. And I think that's what the two things that I've really taken away from this conversation are, that we all have a part to play, and some of the tips will help far more people than you think, you know, like, because people aren't necessarily gonna self-identify as being autistic, but some of the tips, if you take them on board for people, perhaps international members of your team, you will by default end up making communication clearer for more people, and you might not even realize it, but it's still a good and worthwhile thing to do.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there, Kirsty.
As Jo says at the back of our book, actually, Kirsty, which we love, she says everybody will know an autistic person, so it's really an essential read.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you both for your time this morning, for coming on the podcast, and yeah, I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Oh, thanks for having us, Kirsty.
Thank you, Kirsty.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.